Recorded Books Presents Rotten Evidence Reading and Writing in an Egyptian Prison by Ahmed Nadi. Translated by Catherine Halls. Narrated by Michael Rahal. Timeline August 2014. Tariq Al-Taher, the editor-in-chief of Literature Review, Akhbar Al-Adab, publishes an excerpt from Ahmed Naji's second novel, Using Life. April 2015. A 65-year-old Egyptian man files a case against Naji, alleging that reading the excerpt caused him to experience palpitations, sickness, and a drop in blood pressure. Egyptian authorities open a case against Naji and Al-Taher. November 2015. Naji and Al-Taher's case goes to trial. The prosecutor claims Naji's novel is a malicious violation of the sanctity of morals. January 2016. Naji and Al-Taher are acquitted on charges of violating public decency. Prosecutors file an appeal shortly thereafter, arguing that Naji's text harmed public morals. The appeal trial is set for February 6th. February 2016. An Egyptian higher court delivers a guilty verdict and imposes the maximum sentence of 2 years in prison for Naji. Also, Al-Taher is fined for publishing the excerpt. The pair immediately appeal, but it is months before hearings get underway. In the meantime, Naji is taken straight to prison. March 2016. PEN America announces it will confer the PEN Barbie Freedom to Write Award on Naji at its annual literary gala in New York. August 2016. PEN America sends a letter, with the signatures of more than 120 writers, to Egyptian President Abd al-Fattah al-Sisi, demanding Naji's immediate release. December 2016. Naji's prison sentence is suspended after he's served 10 months in prison, and he is temporarily released but remains under a travel ban. May 2017. A Cairo appeals court overturns the February 2016 decision, but also orders the case be retried. May 2018. At the retrial, a Cairo criminal court lifts Naji's travel ban and overturns the original sentence, replacing his jail time with a fine of 20,000 Egyptian pounds, $1,130. July 2018. Naji, finally able to leave Egypt, moves to the United States. Beginnings. I picked up the green bag that held the clothes they'd permitted me to keep. In my other hand, I carried a plastic bag of food, and under one arm was the blanket the intelligence lieutenant had allowed me, as a favor, to bring in with me. I kept tripping on the baggy pant legs of the coarse blue prison uniform. I was escorted by four plainclothes officers, while the lieutenant and another officer walked ahead of us. I was behind them, but I was leading. We passed through a small garden, planted with a handful of trees and lots of cacti. In one corner was a carved wooden bust, poorly proportioned, of a person who was shackled at the wrists. He appeared to be writhing with indigestion. I glanced up at the building ahead of us. It was two stories high and painted a pale blue, and on the wall facing us was a mural depicting a lush equatorial landscape with a waterfall that cascaded all the way from the roof to ground level, then flowed sideways into a small brook that ran through a rainforest teeming with greenery and brightly colored flowers. The mural was remarkably pristine, except for where it was interrupted by windows or the metal door we were now walking toward. I stopped for a second to take in the incongruous sight. The last thing I'd expected to find in prison was a classic specimen of terrible tropical kitsch. The whole place was full of the kinds of printed wallpaper nature scenes that were fashionable in the 80s and 90s, but this masterpiece had been meticulously painted by the hand of an artist willing to deploy every last drop of their mawkish talent in an attempt to make the prison facility look cheerful. It felt like a nightmare. Not a prison. How else to explain these artistic flourishes that seemed custom-made to personally enrage and revolt me?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?